On this program, Pat Hayes of the BIA talks about enrollment. Jess Motter and Steve Crosby of AFN describe their programs. And Andy Hope details the formation of Raven's Bones Foundation. I'm Mo Osley, and welcome to Potlatch. January 2nd, 1977, was the deadline for re-enrollment under the Omnibus Bill. Patrick Hayes, enrollment coordinator for the BIA, gave statistics on the number of new enrollees.
Many of the estimates that were made prior to passage of the Omnibus Bill estimated that there would be somewhere in the neighborhood of about 5,000 additional enrollees. However, we found that when enrollment closed, which was January 2nd, 1977, we had received approximately 8,500 applications for enrollment. And figuring maybe 1.5 to 2 individuals per application, we would be talking about 12,000 additional people. However, I don't think that there is any possibility that 12,000 people will eventually be certified as eligible. I think the figure will probably be a little bit closer to about 5,000. The reason for only having that few certified eligible out of the 12,000 figure is we have received a large number of applications from people who applied before and were denied eligibility last time. They are attempting to enroll again, and without additional evidence of their eligibility being submitted, it is probable that they will again be denied. The publicity that accompanied the enrollment period was a worldwide publicity campaign. Between 60% and 70% of the applications received came from outside the state of Alaska, be that in the lower 48 or from Canada or from wherever.
Pat continues on to outline the time frame for the enrollment process.
We take each one of the applications and put all the information that is contained on that application into our computer system. I would say that the enrollment process is going to take at the minimum of a year and at the maximum of 2 years, depending upon the staffing of this office and the receipt of other projects which may or may not be of a higher priority than the enrollment process. We are going to attempt to get this enrollment done as quickly as possible, because to not do so would be unfair to the applicants. They are eligible for benefits retroactive to January 2nd, 1976, and only that far back. There will not be a recomputation of those sums that were previously sent out by the various regions to their shareholders. The fact of their enrollment will have nothing to do with the land selections, meaning that an individual or a group of individuals enrolled to a particular village, which would put that village in a different land selection category, that will not happen. What will happen is that village will have additional shareholders, but will not be entitled to additional land selections. What we are going to do is to maintain two separate eligibility listings. One listing is those that are eligible under provisions of the original Land Claim Settlement Act, and the second listing being those individuals who are certified as eligible under provisions of the amendment to the Claim Settlement Act.
Buffy St. Marie. The Alaska Economic Development Offices of the Minority Business Enterprise at AFN has been open for 2 years. Its director, Jess Motter, gave the functions of the organization and what some of their projects are.
We do everything from package loans for people to assist people in maintaining businesses after they start. You know, we give technical assistance to people. If people are having problems with their businesses, we go out and try to determine what the problem is. The staff here consists of people that are involved in everything from economics to engineering. We have loan specialists. We have people that are involved in, we have a CPA type of person. I'm a lawyer. We have a variety of talent available here, both financial and construction or engineering wise, that we lend our capabilities and our prior experience to people that are going out into these fields business wise. The first 3 months of operation, October, November, and December, we packaged $7 million worth of loans throughout the state. We saw that at least $5 million worth of the seven were funded. We assisted 100 and better contractors after they'd already started into business. We provided over 1,400 hours of technical assistance time to the community. We've also been involved in regional activities, some of the profit regional corporations, in bidding construction jobs and getting them work and getting minority set-asides. We're involved currently in the pipeline, in the gas pipeline situation to make sure that if it does occur in the state, the minority peoples will be represented a fair share of the business. That's one of our big projects. Another big project right now is a cultural center, a thing that's way off in the future, but we hope in the near future we'll be able to raise funds, both government and private, and funds from the regions, hopefully, to support some type of a cultural center in the state, Native arts and crafts, Native culture. Right now, you know, this is the only office that we have, but we hope that maybe 5 or 6 months from now we'll have an office in Juneau and we'll have an office in Fairbanks, which will make it logistics a lot better, because right now our people, you have to go out and visit these people. You can't, it's difficult to get people, for instance, from the bush to come to the city to do things. So it's much more advantageous for us to go into the bush, but bush travel takes a long time. We haven't got that many people here. Logistics are bad for serving anyone in the far north or the far southeast. We've had, that I know of in the last year and a half or 2 years, one or two at the most failures. And the principal reason for these failures was lack of traffic. And one was a CPA firm that started out, a minority CPA firm, and the other one was a construction company. The CPA firm went out of business because they planned to only service minorities. And the minority people were afraid to use a minority or a beginning CPA firm. They were going to more established firms, and that was what put these people out of business. The other guy was a construction guy, and he just bit off more than he could chew. And he blew his bond, and when he did that, he, you know, his company folded. But as far as that goes, you know, what businesses we've put on the road to date are doing quite well.
Buffy St. Marie. Among organizations serving students in higher education is the Alaska Student Higher Education Services. Steve Crosby gives an outline of the types of services that the program provides.
Counselors for the Talent Search Program are living right in the areas that they are serving. We have a counselor in Kotzebue who will be serving the Nana region. We have a counselor in Nome who will be serving the Bering Straits region and all of the villages there. We have a counselor in Bethel serving Chulista, and a counselor in Dillingham serving Bristol Bay. The offices are set up in Manelik, Kawerik, with the CETA program in Bethel, and out of the Employment Services Office of the State in Dillingham. We are serving Southeastern through the central office here still. the only location that we're actually going to be visiting is Mount Edgecombe High School. But anybody else who would be interested or in need of the types of services that we provide can write to us, and we can serve them through the mail. The type of program that we have, Talent Search, is a career counseling and educational information service. It is designed to do anything and everything that it can to get a student or a young person into an educational program that would best be suited for him or her. Types of things that we would be doing, such as in the career counseling part of the program, is helping a student or a young person figure out what would be the best career to get into. If somebody is very interested, for example, in working outside, they want to have maybe a couple or 3 years of training, really enjoy, say, working in with wood, then possibly trying to get them into some sort of a forest service training program or forest technician type program. It all depends on the individual wants and needs and desires and goals of each student that we're working with. It's very, very important that the student be matched with the career that he or she would be the happiest in and the most capable of performing. The second part is educational information, providing information on all kinds of training opportunities, not only colleges, but vocational schools, beauty schools, airline schools, anything that we can get our hands on, we're going to do so that we can have the information available for our clients. Third component would be technical assistance, information on financial aid and technical assistance in filling out those types of forms. They're complicated for anybody, and many times if you have somebody who can help you or guide you through the completion of these forms, it certainly lessens the headache. And many times what happens if the guidance isn't there, students or clients, young people, would just not think that it's worth it. One way of looking at financial aid, one way that I look at it, is that filling out application forms for financial aid may take maybe up to 3 hours, but it may pay off at $4,000, getting $1,333 an hour isn't bad pay. Funding agencies have a limited pocket or fund of, you know, a pool of money that they can draw from. It's getting more and more restrictive or limited every year with the financial crunch that the whole country is going through. And if a student doesn't apply himself, or if a student goofs around in school in that first phase, it is going to be more difficult for them to get funding later. Thank you.
Sarah Buffy. The Raven's Bounds Foundation has been organized within just the past year. Andy Hope, one of the directors, describes the organizational structure.
We had been discussing the possibility of some type of organization, corporation or foundation that would be independent, and we could therefore have artistic control over the various projects on, you know, that we had in mind. And, well, the educational thing was the most obvious thing that we would like to have control over, so that we wouldn't have to funnel funds through, you know, various agencies, and therefore, you know, be less independent than we would be if we operated our own program and applied for funds on our own. So at the first Cultural Heritage Task Force meeting at the end of October, we formally decided to incorporate, and we had some lawyers draw up some incorporation papers, and we signed them at that time, and we took the name Raven's Bones Foundation, which originates from Southeast Alaska. There are three Thlinkit clans that use that name for a tribal house. The Quashkequan of Yakutat, which is a Raven clan, they use that name, Raven's Bones, for one of their houses. The Duktaintan from Huna, which is another Raven clan, they use that as the name for one of their tribal houses. And the Deshitan in Angoon, another Raven clan, they all use that as the name of for one of their clan houses. And the reason that we selected that name is because we wanted to honor one of the old-time masters, spiritual leaders, Harry Bremner from Yakutat. He was a Quashkequan elder who passed away just about a year ago. So we wanted to kind of honor him, and to, you know, because we thought his spirit, you know, was a good reflection, what we thought Native culture should reflect. There's eight of us on the board. Larry Avakana, Anupiak from Barrow originally. Fred Anderson and Aleut from Naknek originally. Peggy Deem, Suquamish lady from Washington State originally. Carmen Quinto, a Thlinkit from Southeast. Nora Downhauer, Thlinkit from Southeast. Ernie Frankson, Nupiak from Point Hope. Joseph Nungatuk, Nupiak from Wales. Myself, the main thing that we were trying to get started, initiated, is a literature program, and we'll get that going through a journal, an annual journal, or a reader that we're putting out. And this reader, Raven's Bones Journal, will be have a multicultural content. In other words, it'll have we'll have pieces in there from writers from a wide variety of traditions: Euro-American, Afro-American, Native American, to name a few. And then we want to initiate some type of educational program, and what we have in mind is a summertime institute, and we're planning to have one in Fairbanks this summer for 3 weeks. The funding for these are coming from a variety of sources. For the journal, we have a proposal into the Coordinating Council of Literary Magazines, which supports small presses and small magazines throughout the country. And we should know within about a little over a month whether that proposal is funded, and that will pay for the printing of Raven's Bones Journal, which will be printed letterpress. And the funding for the Summer Institute will come from a variety of sources too, mainly the State Arts Council and the National Endowment for the Arts. and possibly the Humanities Forum, and our own money from our own fundraising projects. The main one, which will be a fine arts auction, which we're planning for next month in Anchorage. April 7th at the Anchorage Westward Ballroom, 9:30 at night.
Well, I think it's time I'm leaving Oklahoma. There's 49 more ways to live my life. America, I'm sure that I don't know you. And I do believe you're worth another try. Sweet America, you're a jive America. And fall down on your knees and cry. Sweet America, sing about America. To me, I see you naked, while others see just what they want to see. Sweet America, you're a jive America. Then fall down on your knees and cry.
This is the title song to Buffy St. Marie's album called Sweet America. We've been listening throughout the program to different cuts from this album. I'd like to remind the people that are listening to the program that if you have any comments or questions about our program, you can write in care of Potlatch, KUAC, University of Alaska, Fairbanks, Alaska, 99701. I'm Mo Wasley, and thank you for listening.
Potlatch is produced by KUAC under Title I of the Higher Education Act.